This is Flea for This Little Light, a podcast about falling in love with music. I started a nonprofit music school about 20 years ago called the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music. The reason that I started doing this podcast was music education. I'll be speaking with Rick Rubin, Thundercat, Stuart Copeland, Margot Price, Corey Henry, Cynthia Erivo, Sheila E., and Patti Smith.
Please listen and follow This Little Light, a presentation of Cadence 13 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amy Lawrence.
1 hour down. Is it like riding a bike? I'm not sure if I fell off the bike in the first hour, but it does become more and more familiar and comfortable. I missed it. After a week and a half away from the radio show, I missed it. Now, not quite back to the regular routine. I am not in our CBS Sports Radio headquarters. Instead, I'm on the campus of Syracuse University. Would you believe they let me teach students? Maybe if they knew what was happening in the classroom, they would not. But for now, they're allowing me to teach a class for over a four-week span. I get to be an adjunct professor and share some of the wisdom and experience from a long time in this business. And it's actually, that's becoming more comfortable for me, too. The first class, I shouldn't say this on the radio because students are probably going to hear it. I was nervous because it was something new for me, but now it's becoming more comfortable, and talking about radio is one of my favorite things in the world. So it's really cool to have this opportunity and also to do a show from Syracuse, where I did shows as a student when I was here going back over 20 years ago. So it's an honor. It's a surreal moment for me, and it's also good to be back. I was starting to get the itch. It does actually feel a little bit like an itch that I need to scratch. And so to get back on the air after being refreshed and rejuvenated, it's cool. It reminds me, the time away reminds me why I love this job so much, but also reminds me it's good to take a break for a reset and for just a refreshing before a really busy playoff season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, the number works too, 855-212-4227. The Kings take a 2-0 lead on the Warriors, winning both the games in Sacramento. There was a pivotal moment in the fourth quarter that everyone will be talking about on Tuesday.
Curry has the rebound. Sabonis on the floor, and he just got stomped on by Green, and a foul was called. And that may warrant an ejection. There was nothing subtle about that. He went to the floor, and Green in the tangle, it appeared to me like he just... I said stomped, and until I see a replay, I'm going to stick with that for the moment. But Sabonis is still down.
My leg got grabbed. Second time in two nights. Referees just watch it. I got to land my foot somewhere. And I'm not the most flexible person, so it's not stretching that far.
So you didn't really see where you were stepping? You just kind of...
I can only step so far. I'm pulling my leg away. So it is what it is.
I didn't see what he did afterwards. But for sure, it's a, you know, it's a flagrant two for sure, and it'd be interesting to see what the NBA does after they review it. But I didn't see the aftermath.
Is Draymond telling us that had he tried to step any further, he might have pulled a groin? He's not the most flexible guy. Needs to go to some yoga. I don't know. You hear Gary Gerald with that call in the fourth quarter, about midway through, maybe a little earlier than that. Following that, the Warriors were able to tie the game, but then the Kings with a late 17-8 run to pull away and win game number two. We are pleased to welcome Sean Cunningham, who is there right in the center of the action, reporter and producer for Fox 40, also part of the Kings radio network as a reporter. Sean, let's start with the end, the post game. What's your reaction to what we heard from Draymond Green, his explanation about how this all unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, good to be with you. It's a little it's a little head scratcher because I had a great view of it myself. Mm. From having to shoot for our station here in Sacramento and be this multimedia journalist that we're all doing, and had a great look at it. And yeah, I can understand a little bit of the frustration, certainly with Domas grabbing his leg. Obviously, they had a little dust up in the first game that looked very much like Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone, if you remember that, in the NBA Finals with the Bulls and the Jazz, where they get tied up and keep falling down and not letting each other up. And Draymond and Domas had that same moment, kind of in the same spot as it happened tonight in Game 2. There was a little bit of him grabbing his leg, but I think also, you know, there was these Warriors took exception to Domas kind of flinging Klay Thompson around right before that. So, but certainly nothing excuses that move where Draymond looks like Ndamukong Suh and just absolutely stomping on Domantas Sabonis. And Amy, we literally just got out of the locker room about 10 minutes ago, almost 15 now, after speaking with Domas, who had, you know, x-rays that were obviously negative. He's going to undergo some further testing. And everyone in that locker room saying, not only is there no place for that, but they're choosing their words carefully, but, you know, they've got a teammate down on the ground, and there's concern for the health, and Domas is riling up the crowd, Draymond Green is riling up the crowd as he did, and there was some dudes that took some exception to that.
Mm. So as we're talking, I'm watching the sequence again. It's on your Twitter, the whole thing, for Fox 40. I don't know. I understand why Draymond Green's reputation precedes him, but also he did have his foot grabbed, and I kind of felt like it maybe could have been a little more equitable, flagrant one for each of them. It certainly wasn't an accident that Sabonis grabbed his leg. I mean, that was intentional as well. So the officials did go back and issue a foul, but obviously the flagrant two for Draymond changes a lot. So then what about the moments following that? How did you see the momentum shift in the game?
Yeah, I think, look, Harrison Barnes kind of huddled up the team, and as Kevin Herter said after the game, when Harrison speaks, we listen. I mean, he chooses his moments to get vocal with his team, and it doesn't happen all the time. He's not a rah-rah guy. He doesn't have to do that too often, but it was a moment where he definitely did that, and they all listened, and there was a moment where everyone, it worked to their favor. The crowd certainly got into it. They loved to see that Draymond Green was ejected. And look, Davion Mitchell had his career game. Malik Monk has been a guy who's been absolutely just feeding off of this crowd here in Sacramento. This is a fan base, as you all know, who just hasn't even had a taste of any type of success for a winning season, let alone being in the first round of a playoff series with their big brothers down in the Bay Area who are a dynasty. So, it's been some rowdy times, and I think they fed off of it. And who would have thought? I mean, you could make an argument that this Kings team and maybe even the crowd, which I didn't expect, because I said before the series that this Golden State Warriors team, there's nothing they haven't seen, nothing that they won't expect and haven't experienced already. And here they are looking like a team that not only is feeling some pressure, but might have a Kings team that has remained composed and poised and might be in their head a little bit as they go to Game 3 in San Francisco.
How do they remain poised and composed when they do not have the experience? Where does that come from?
No, and I asked that question ad nauseum this week, Amy. And if they all circle right back to not only just Mike Brown, who obviously was Steve Kerr's associate head coach during this time, but you can look to literally three other coaches on this coaching staff that come from the Warriors. Luke Laux, who had experience over there, and of course, Leandro Barbosa, the Brazilian blur, who was very well liked in that Warriors team. But they know the identity and the DNA of this Warriors team very, very well. And, that can only go so well so far. I mean, certainly talent is still going to win out, and you still have to go play the games. But they are on these guys not to fall into the gamesmanship. If you go back to Game 1, there's moments where Draymond Green is chirping it at Trey Lyles, and he has this kind of like Michaela Maroney-esque kind of smirk at him when he smiles at him, just totally amused at Draymond's antics. And then you look at Malik Monk, who is like almost the perfect guy to go toe-to-toe with the verbal barbs. And Malik is, in my opinion, just the heart and soul of this team. I mean, look, Domas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox are the best players, but this team looks like they're at their best when they've got that swagger and that attitude of Malik Monk, who obviously can score, but when he's not turning the ball over, playing some pretty nice defense and obviously being a playmaker, they're at their absolute best.
Sean Cunningham is with us from Sacramento, where the Kings take a 2-0 lead after what was a record playoff drought. They have got the Warriors, I don't want to say on the ropes, but they got the Warriors right where they want them. He's a sports reporter and producer for Fox 40 and also part of Kings Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. You mentioned that element of Kings playing in the shadow of the Warriors. I actually mentioned it last hour on the show, so I'm glad you brought it up. How much does that play into the dynamic of this series, that it is the Warriors who are close to them, not just geographically, but also same Bay Area, and a lot of the fans are splitting?
Yeah, I mean, it's been clockwork. I've covered this team since 2002, and I grew up in this city. And when King season ends, we hang up the King's credential and we jump on the Warriors to cover them as far as they go in the postseason. Gosh. Because we are an extension of the Bay Area. You go in there, you're covering A's, Giants, Niners, Raiders when they were here. I mean, that's just how far back this thing goes. And so we're very familiar with the Warriors as well. But and like the Kings during that time, for as bad as they've been, you're talking 17 years, 16 seasons. You could argue at a time, like, you still have passionate fans and they still sell out this building, but you can argue that they've sort of lost their market at times during these championship runs. Let's face it, you look at the Sacramento, Stockton, Modesto, Yuba City, Fairfield, this whole area, and they're all in the footprint of the Bay Area. So they get these games, they see everything, and I think the Kings take exception to it. And if you look at just the way they finished the season, look, obviously the Warriors had their struggles. They finished sixth. And the Kings, who are at third, everyone's saying, oh, they want to take the Kings. Everyone wants the Kings, and rightfully so. They don't have the playoff experience. But the Kings, in a weird way, really talking to these players even the week leading up to the playoffs, talking about wanting to play the Warriors, not just because of Mike Brown, but to really kind of vindicate what they've done in this season alone. And them thinking that, look, doesn't matter how far they go in these NBA playoffs, but taking down the Warriors would really mean something as opposed to taking down a team like the Clippers or the Pelicans.
What happened in the first quarter with the 9 turnovers and also the Kings missing, what was their first 10-plus triples?
Yeah, it just ugly basketball. And I didn't have that on my bingo card to see such a low-scoring affair after the first quarter and just, absolute garbage on the court. But Malik Monk, I'm telling you, he just has this weird way of turning around a basketball game. Here he comes on, hits a couple threes. Kevin Huerter kind of warms up, and off they go. They're off to the races, and you have another, high-scoring affair. So, that's the one thing in the Warriors' DNA where they're able to turn the ball over. And when they turn the ball over a lot, it's more times than not, they don't really give up a lot of points off those turnovers. Tonight they did, and I think that really played into the Kings' hands. And, I mean, I know I mentioned him earlier, Davion Mitchell had a career game, and yes. This team was absolutely rallying around what he was able to do, especially against a guy like Steph Curry. Here he is in his second season, a little bit undersized, and just that bulldog picking up Steph Curry full court. For the entire game, and it was a lot of fun to see. And he hits that big shot, not known for his offense. He gets a dunk, first time in this season he's got a dunk. He's such a little guy, it comes off of a steal and then hits that triple right in front of the Kings bench, and was just unbelievable.
1:18 to go. That really was the dagger. And Davion Mitchell, what a moment for him. What is the strategy defensively against Steph? Because he did not have a great shooting night, though some of those he missed wide open.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just him picking up full court and trying to just stay locked on as much as he can. I mean, he's going to get lost in the screen a little bit, but I think a lot of it is just a hope and a prayer, and you just hope he misses, or hopes he force him into an off-balance shot or just making a bad pass. I mean, this, like I said, they want to force them into turnovers, and look, this isn't a Kings team that's a good defensive team, so to see moments like that, they really ring the bell on that. They have you've probably seen it by now. They've got a chain, this corny little medallion, and this laser and smoke show in the locker room. After every win, they award a defensive player of the game award. It might as well be named after Davion Mitchell, because he could win it literally every single night, but he won it again tonight. And it's these types of little moments that they have to celebrate so that this team can believe in that they're not this awful, awful defensive team, that there is moments that they can really celebrate where they can buckle down and show some defense. And it really shows on the road. Like, when they're on the road, this team is a much better defensive team than they are at home. Home is where they really get killed defensively. And that's kind of – obviously, their bread is buttered on the offensive end, putting up historic numbers. But if they can make just any small little incremental improvement defensively, it goes a long way for Sacramento.
Sean Cunningham with us from Sacramento, literally just finishing up with post-game press conferences in the Sacramento Kings locker room following their Game 2 win, the 2-0 lead against the Warriors. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Light the beam has become nationally recognized. It's now a phrase that, even if you're not part of the Kings fan base, you're hearing spewed on national TV. How much does light the beam grip the Sacramento fan base?
It's insane. I mean, I don't know how much time you have. I could talk for probably 20 minutes about how it's captivated the city. You've got people tattooing the beam on them. So not even
stop
not even the beam,
it.
Get Mike Brown's face
stop
on them.
Stop it.
There's literally a fan who I've seen who Mike Brown was asked about it today. He's tattooed Mike Brown's face on his calf. He also has a beam tattoo on his arm. You've got every business in town turning everything purple, which isn't all that uncommon, but the fan base loves it so much. I was working, I work at Fox 40 here in Sacramento, and like a typical newsroom, you get news tips. You know, people say, hey, there's a car crash here, or what's going on over here, police activity on the street. The night that that happened back in October, they see a purple light in the air, and you're literally getting people emailing and calling into the station going, what is this light? Like, what's happening? Aliens, what's going on? It's got to be something Kings-related. It's over the arena. And it just happens organically. And, like, the whole – I don't know if anyone has heard, but, you know, the idea came from somebody within the organization, John Reinhart, the president of the team, seeing how they used to light a halo around the A in Anaheim when the Angels would win way back when. And they're saying, well, there's something similar we can do here. But it happened kind of organically. And once people saw it, man, this place goes crazy. They flood Doco Plaza right outside of the main entrance of Golden One Center. And if you were here on game one and they win right after the Warriors game, I mean, you've got L Street it turned into a viewing party. You have another square that's turned into an ice skating rink normally during the winter season. You've got people packing that for a viewing party. And then they're right outside of Golden One Center looking up in the sky, say, celebrating. Making out under, making pictures, all these taking pictures. I mean, there's so many things going on under the beam, and these fans have lost their mind over it. And it, you know, it wasn't even just the beam. You can go back to Malik Monk getting a little cut on his face and wearing the Band-Aid. You got all these people in the arena wearing Band-Aids on their face, and even De'Aaron giving Malik a bunch of garbage saying, like, hey, the cut has healed. You don't have to wear the Band-Aid anymore. And he's like, how can I take it off? So, yeah, it's things like that, these little organic moments that this small town that like I said, the little brother to the Bay Area that they just embrace, and it's kind of like a college atmosphere in here.
Sean, I'm going to assume the beam is not paid for with taxpayer money.
God, I would hope not.
the Kings are going on. I mean, it's a pretty impressive beam. You must be able to see it from all over the city.
Yeah, you can. I mean, there's moments where it looks a little brighter than others, especially if you get a little bit of an overcast and how it reflects off the clouds. It is, they had one laser or one beam originally, and now they've added like four to kind of strengthen it. And FAA regulations, you kind of have to pull the plug right when midnight happens. But people are celebrating. They take pictures from everywhere, and Instagram accounts and people buying all kinds of T-shirts and hats.
Oh my goodness.
And like I said, literally
awesome.
People tattooing beams on their body. They're just loving it.
Well, that is a little extreme, but I do love the rally cry and the fact that fans are coming together to support their team, and they have this beam that really is the central focus. It's cool, and it's pretty purple, too. Before I let you go, Sean, internally, how high are the expectations for this playoff run? First one in 16 years, what are their expectations inside their own locker room?
Yeah, I feel like they don't have much pressure on their shoulders coming into the series because, let's face it, everyone else, I mean, the Warriors come into the sixth seed, and they were still favored just because of their championship pedigree and defending champs and star power on that team, and you've got Hall of Famers. So a team that really, you got two All-Stars in Sacramento and not a lot of star power outside of that. So I feel like they came in here just with playing with house money. You know, I don't think that they thought they'd be this good this soon, and this might be like another year, and maybe they thought that they'd be battling for a playoff spot or maybe in a playoff position. So coming into this series now, it's a little bit like, okay, now that you've protected home court and that old adage that a series doesn't start until a road team loses.
I just used that last hour.
It's true. I mean, but it is true. We use it so often. I hate cliches, but it's like it's a cliche because it's
for a reason. Yes.
You go into San Francisco and you're up 2-0. You're halfway there, but you haven't done anything yet. And Mike Brown's going to be on his team to know that to constantly remind them about that. And I'm curious to see, do they get overconfident? Is there a comfort level? Do they kind of let go of the rope, so to speak, as they head into San Francisco? Because let's face it, for as rowdy as Sacramento has been, obviously they're used to really great atmospheres, more so when the team was in Oakland than in San Francisco, frankly. But it's still a fantastic atmosphere. And I think now you've poked the bear. And the Warriors fans, they're going to be ready for the Kings. So now it's time to put up or shut up. You're going to go in there on a Thursday night game, and then it's an early game. It's a 12:30 Pacific time tip on Sunday. So even a little bit of the time change could maybe affect things, but you still have the home court. So you haven't lost on your home floor. You know you'll be coming back for at least a game five if necessary.
And I love the way the fans are representing Sacramento, representing the Kings, loud and proud, and then, of course, the beam, which My goodness, you might be able to see in the next state on some nights. It's so bright. So find Sean.
We got to get you out to see it.
I would love that. Absolutely. It really has become a national moniker. It's not just about the Kings anymore. When you start to hear the announcers on TNT yell, light the beam, well, then you know it's become mainstream and gone viral. So it's really cool. We've been in here looking at some of the photos, and it's incredible. As you point out, it's all over social media too. So you can find Sean on Twitter at Sean Cunningham, reporter, producer for Fox 40, also part of the Kings radio network as a reporter with the great Gary Gerald, who is an icon, obviously. You're welcome back anytime. I hope we have an occasion to talk Kings basketball before this playoff run is done, Sean. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely, Amy. Pleasure to talk to you anytime you want. You hit me up.
That is fun. I love the idea that you've got a team that is starting from the bottom, has nothing to lose and everything to gain, and its very first challenge is against the big brothers who have the rings and have the attention and have all of the splash. They've got the nicknames, the Splash Brothers, yada, yada, yada. And here are the Kings who don't care. And that's really the attitude. But I love what Sean had to say about Mike Brown and the other coaches that came from the Warriors staff. This is not an entire group that has zero experience. Very often a coach can bring that by stepping into a locker room, that credibility. And this is just one example. When Doug Peterson took the job with the Jacksonville Jaguars, he's a Super Bowl winning coach, instant credibility. When Mike McCarthy took the job with the Dallas Cowboys, Super Bowl winning coach. Now you have to keep that credibility. Mike Brown's going to have to keep it, but he brings that experience, that wisdom. So these young Kings, they're hungry for it. They're going to eat it up. They're going to take what he says, and they're going to try to apply it out there on the court. So it's fantastic the way it's come together, but we'll see how it goes when they shift to the Chase Center. Good stuff with Sean, first time on the show. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page, it's been a while. Have you reconnected with us? It might be time. It's After Hours from Syracuse University. I need to keep saying that because it's almost too good to be true that I get to do a show from here after teaching my class for these next few weeks. We're glad to have you with us. I'm glad to be back here on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Grabbing it is Nyquist. He'll toss it left side, steal to the back post, cut off in front by Hartley, who couldn't get it out. Here's a turnover, open in front. They score! They score! Ryan Hartman helps the Wild steal game one of a bouncing puck in front, and he wins his double overtime marathon in Dallas as the Wild prevail 3-2.
In overtime on a power play to Kopitar, to Doughty in the middle, to Kopitar left circle to the goal line, Arvidsson centers, score! Alex Iafallo wins it in overtime! It's a power play goal! Great, quick puck movement by the Kings. They worked it down low. A touch pass by Arvidsson to Iafallo in front, who buries it. The Kings take game one here in Edmonton.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We love sudden death. Those are two of the greatest words put together in all of sports. And on the first night of the NHL playoffs, what do we get? A pair of games that go into sudden death overtime. In fact, with the Wild and the Stars, they end up needing a second overtime period. So you hear the call on the Wild Radio Network and then also on Kings Radio. This takes place, the Kings, in Edmonton, where the Oilers, who are 50-game winners, have already lost their home ice advantage. And actually, I guess it applies to the Dallas Stars as well. But there's a lot of expectations around the Oilers after the seasons that we saw from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Of course, all the pressure in the world is on the shoulders and the backs of the Boston Bruins. You do not set records for wins in a season and shatter the old mark for points in a season without there being a lot of attention because, and this applies to the Bruins specifically, but I do believe it would apply to most other franchises. They've come off a season like this one. But in the case of the Bruins, because of their recent history, because of their franchise history, because of their fan base, because it's Boston, the expectations are always that they will compete for a Stanley Cup, right? So recently, the St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup final against Boston that did not go Boston's way, massive disappointment. But a lot of times, because of the success of the city of Boston with its sports teams, and you could use other cities, but right now we're talking about Boston, anything less than a championship is then labeled a failure. That's extreme, but it's an extreme that the city of Boston has earned because of its success with its four sports teams. But in the case of the Bruins, it's not just the fact that they have high expectations as a franchise generally. It's that you're wrapping in 65 wins, 135 points. What does that mean if they don't end up with the Stanley Cup? Was it all for naught? Does it mean nothing? Well, no. Big picture, it doesn't mean nothing. But how many times do we remember and the Washington Capitals are not a great example because they didn't have the Stanley Cup in their history. The Bruins do. But remember those years where the Washington Capitals were the President's Trophy winners and they had the best regular seasons but couldn't capitalize in the playoffs. It's that times 15, 20 for the Bruins because of what they have in their history and because of where they start as a franchise. And now you add this historic run and nothing less than a Stanley Cup will satisfy the fan base. Nothing less than a Stanley Cup will be the fitting end to this regular season that they've had. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Bruins off and running against the Panthers. Producer Jay, if you got the audio, let's hear it.
Now McAvoy, left wing, Marchand, left circle, shoots, he scores! Brad Marchand with a wrist shot off the line, glove, and it trickles in. Bruins 2, Panthers nothing. That's his 50th Stanley Cup playoff goal. Here's McAvoy. Shoots. Hit his own guy. Zaka chopping at it. Rebound. Lyon with the stop. They score! I think that might have been Pavel Zaka who got it. Got the second chance. Maybe the third. It could have been DeBrusk who was chopping at it. Either way, Bruins 3, Panthers 1.
On the Bruins Radio Network, listen to the crowd there at the Garden for the Bruins. Also, Producer Jay, did you hear how their own announcer pronounced Brad's last name? Jay and I just had this debate off, well, debate. We just were comparing notes off air because people, of course, will call him a variety of things. I was saying Marchand and Jay was saying Marchand, which he's not the only one. People do that too. That's my story and I'm sticking to it. I'm going with Marchand. Anyway, here's the crazy thing. 50 playoff goals. 50 playoff goals. There is a lot to be said about the longevity, the productivity, but also the opportunity for the Boston Bruins that one of their best players, one of their longest tenured players in Marchand, has 50 playoff goals. That's amazing. David Pastrnak, Jake DeBrusk also scoring. And the Bruins, though they mentioned nerves, I thought that was pretty interesting. In fact, Marchand himself said that there were nerves because they don't want to have a letdown as they start the postseason. So kind of cool. Jay, I don't know what else you have from the Bruins, but if you want to throw something else in, you certainly can. Otherwise, I'm going to go talk to Marco. All right, so let's hear from Brett. No, what did you just say in my ear?
I got Marchand.
It's not Marchand. It's Marchand. Wait, so you're not going to take Judd's word for it?
I don't know. Not yet. I have to grow me. I'll need
some
practice.
Oh my gosh. Why are you the authority on how to pronounce his last name?
It's just been, I've been saying that, I guess, for so long.
But you've been saying it wrong.
Tomato, tomato.
No. It's like, okay, I say pecan.
Pecan.
People get mad at me because I don't say pecan. I've been saying pecan as long as I can remember, okay? But this is his name. You don't get to determine how to pronounce his last name, you goofball.
Can we just call him Brad?
No, we could call him by his name. Why are you so? How would you like it if someone said your last name wrong and insisted on doing it just because they'd been doing it for a long time?
Yeah, I suppose. All right, Brad Marchand.
Thank you.
We have
Thank
Brad
you.
Marchand.
It sounds like it's not your name. You don't get to decide. Jimmy.
All right, you want to hear from Brad?
I would like to hear from Brad Marchand, yes.
It's always good to start the first game with a win, but we haven't accomplished anything yet. And you know, each game that goes on is harder and harder to win, and they're going to push back. All good teams do, and they have a lot of really good players in that group that are competitive. And that second game is always a tough one. So, yeah, it's always, again, it's good to start the way that we did, but, we can be better, and we need to be better, because they're going to come out really hard next game, and we're going to be able to match that.
Hockey players are so boring sometimes. They really are. At least Draymond Green gives us some color. But, yes, Brad Marchand, as not only Jay is now going to pronounce, but Judd Surratt on Bruins Radio did as well. And it's a good start for them. The Panthers... I don't think I should label them the sacrificial lamb, because it's hockey and just the nature of the game means that anything can and will happen. We see monumental upsets in hockey because we're not talking about teams that score 17 goals, right? You're talking about the slimmest margin for error.
It's hockey.
It's hockey, exactly. But also the fact that you've got goalies who can, what's the phrase this time of the year? They stand on their heads. You've got goalies that can make a huge difference when it comes to a series like this. Again, the margin for error is so slim, which means the Bruins are right to be on edge. But the veteran leadership they have, there's no way they have a letdown, even though they've come through what was the best regular season we've ever seen in the NHL's history. How do you say it again, Jay? You can't admit when you're wrong, huh?
We'll do it Marchand for today.
Oh, for today. Jay can't apologize. It's not his strength. But I did miss him, and I did miss you, and I did miss Marco, and it's good to be back. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
More. Yes, of course I'm willing to do more. I never said that we were going to stop. I actually said the opposite.
But we will continue. You recommend that Dan Snyder be removed as the team owner. Okay,
the gentlelady's time has expired. The gentleman may answer her question.
I think I'm good.
Will you remove him?
I don't have the authority to remove him.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You all may remember that. It was last summer, June of 22, and Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, was called. Well, he wasn't there in person. He was over Zoom. I'm not a cat. But he was there in part as part of this hearing to testify about the commander situation. So Congress, this committee, actually launched an investigation about what was happening with the commanders based on some of the allegations around Daniel Snyder and how he was running his franchise. Well, we know at this point there's a ton of smoke, and where there is smoke, there is fire. The NFL has done its own investigation. Now there's another independent investigation that's taking place around the commanders. We also had the congressional committee that was involved. It behooves the Snyders to sell the team before the NFL forces Daniel Snyder to sell the team. And once a franchise in the NFL becomes available, a lot of rich people move very quickly. So here we are. Are you ready for the number? The agreement in principle will make the Commanders the richest sale in sports history. $6.05 billion. It's the B word, you guys. It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about the Broncos and their record sale price. Remember, that was the Walton Penner family, the Walmart heirs, who bought the team right before, after Russell Wilson was traded to the Broncos, right before the season started, $4.65 billion. I was expecting that we would see a jump in price for the Commanders. I wasn't expecting it to be this much of a gap between the most recent record sale and the Commanders at $6.05 billion. Now, I suspect part of it is because it's near the nation's capital. Part of it is because it's an historic franchise, right? Part of it is because it's on the East Coast. Let's be fair. This is not a knock on the Broncos. If you guys know me, you know I've been a Broncos fan since age 13. But there is something about buying a franchise on the East Coast where there's a concentration of people in the Washington, Baltimore, Virginia, D.C. area. And the fact that you can get in to this market, into this metro area with all of its possibilities, corporate partners, the number of people that you can tap into in terms of ticket sales, it's a rich market. It's a rich area. And cost of living is higher in the Northeast than it is in other places around the country. So $4.65 billion for the Broncos last year. And this is what it's come to. Latest franchise to sell will go at over $6 billion. And by the way, fully financed. I can't even fathom that. Forget monopoly money. That's obscene. I know there are people out there who have this kind of money, but it blows me away. Josh Harris is leading this bid. If you don't know his name, he's got partners. It's not like he's doing it all by himself. But Josh Harris is the leader of this group. It includes Magic Johnson. Daniel Snyder had the right of refusal, I guess. Remember, he insisted that he was not going to sell to Bezos, to the Amazon owner. Is it his name? Jeff? Jeff Bezos, the Amazon owner. So instead, you had other groups that were able to step up and submit their bids. I don't know if this was the richest. I suspect there were other bids that were in the same neighborhood. But it's Josh Harris, the name that you will hear. It's really a group, but he's headlining it. And $6.05 billion fully financed. Wow. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I tell you a lot that the NFL is a cash cow. In fact, with my class of students here on the campus of Syracuse University, which is where I'm doing my show from now, it's pretty sweet to be here. And it's kind of funny because our Syracuse affiliate doesn't have people in the building overnight. Many of our local affiliates, they no longer have staff that work overnight. It's a cost-cutting thing. But if you're carrying my show and your system's automated, you don't necessarily need to have a body, a human in the building overnight. So we did request to have the show at our Syracuse affiliate. They said, sorry, we don't have anyone there. Now, that was the same case with Green Bay. If you remember last September, I did two shows from Green Bay and our affiliate there, and they just gave me a code and let me go in the building. But not everyone loves me the way that Green Bay does. Not everyone trusts me the way that Green Bay does. Anyway, so Syracuse said, we can't staff overnight. We don't have anyone who can be there with her. And so instead, I'm using, you guys know that we've got this piece of equipment called a Comrex. People did their shows from home. People still do their shows and their stuff from home on this piece of equipment that is studio quality. But I got to thinking, well, first of all, I didn't really want to do my show from a hotel room because I felt like that was anticlimactic if I'm going to be here at Syracuse. But then I realized, oh my goodness, this is a university that pours millions and millions of dollars into its facilities. They've got donors and they have world-class facilities, which is why it's the best broadcasting school in the country and has been for decades. So I thought, maybe I'll reach out and see if I can find some studio space and if they'll just allow me to park the Comrex and park my rear end in a studio that has the soundproof walls so that the quality is good. And they did. It was great. Now, we nearly had a major disaster earlier when we couldn't get through the university firewall, but disaster averted, they fixed it. And so it's pretty cool. You wouldn't know. This is even better than when I do the show from my home, even though funny tip. I stack pillows in front of me because the pillows absorb the sound, so it doesn't bounce back and appear as though I'm in my bathroom doing the show. Admit it. You've heard people over the course of the last 3 years who sound like they're doing the show from their bathrooms. Anyway, it doesn't sound like that. And so it's really cool to be here in a building where I took classes 20 plus years ago. And so all that to say, I was just telling my students earlier that, in fact, the NFL is a cash cow. It's the league that every other league wants to be when it grows up. And this is why. Because supply and demand, it's one of those situations where a team only comes up available for sale maybe one a year, but even that is not the norm. And you, if you get in, you hook into the investment, you hook into the NFL, you will make money hand over fist. So yes, Josh Harris and his group are putting up $6 billion fully financed. They are going to make that money back, not only because of the franchise they're purchasing, but because of the league this franchise is a part of. So maybe you have to spend a little money. You have to put yourself out there. It sounds like an astronomical price, but they will make the money back because the NFL rewards its owners richly. Its members are rewarded richly. All right, that's halfway through. Wowzers. I'm not sure if I feel like the show is going fast, if I feel like it's going slow. What I do know is that I still have a lot to tell you about my trip. I haven't even scratched the surface. I actually just got a text from a family member who's up listening. I haven't even shared the photos of my Grand Canyon experience with the family yet, but you're going to get the story coming up. It's good to have you with us after Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.